If you listen to this podcast and follow what we do at Troutbitten, then you're a thoughtful angler, and you don't accept the status quo simply because that's how it's always been done. Squall of Fishing designs and creates fly fishing apparel with this same philosophy. Squalla was started by a group of lifelong fly anglers who spent their careers working for some of the biggest names in the outdoor industry, and they understood that essential fly fishing apparel like waders, jackets, sun gear, and insulation could simply be better. So now, Squalla makes gear for us, the like-minded few, serious anglers who don't take themselves too seriously. Check them out at squallafishing.com. Water is essential for life, but for Orvis, it's the blood of the brand. Orvis has been the leader in fly fishing since 1856. No other brand can match the explorative and innovative spirit they bring to the water today. Everything at Orvis is about inspiring and empowering adventure and wonder in nature. Rooted in the vitality of fly fishing, fueled by passion and curiosity for the outdoors, Orvis designs and develops products and experiences, providing the knowledge and expertise to enable more meaningful moments and connections in nature. With over a century and a half of experience in the field and on the water, Orvis seeks to ignite that passion in others. This is the Troutbitten Podcast.
Troutbitten.
Troutbitten?
Troutbitten.
Troutbitten.
Troutbitten?
Yeah, Troutbitten.
Troutbitten.
It's about trout.
Wild trout.
This is Troutbitten.
This is the Troutbitten Podcast. Thanks for tuning in. My name is Dominic Swentoski. I'm the owner of Troutbitten and the author of Troutbitten.com. All right, we're back to the task of breaking down critical nymphing concepts. This is part three, and we're about to consider the advantages and disadvantages of fishing with a suspender. That's what we call an indicator. But more on that in a minute. First, let me remind you, this is a seven-part skills series where we cover just one aspect of a larger topic. This skills series is all about how and why we make nymphing decisions on the water. Understanding these critical concepts is how we solve the next mystery about what trout want to eat and how they want to see it. So we covered that enough in episode one of this series, where we also brought up three questions that kind of make you face reality about your own drifts down there. Then last week, episode two, was all about the decision to have more influence or less over our nymphs. And now this week is about suspension techniques. So do you need to listen to the other podcasts before this one? No, but it certainly won't hurt. And the more you check out all the other resources that we mention here, the other skills series about nymphing, and the Troutbitten articles linked in these podcast show notes, the more you'll have a complete picture of the concepts. Because once again, we're not attempting to cover much in this one episode. This isn't about rigging or the mechanics of casting. Instead, this discussion is focused on why we might choose one method over the other. All right, then, allow me to introduce my friend and co-host for this season, Mr. Chief Justice, Austin Kearney Dando.
Chief Justice?
Chief Justice, Mr.
Is that a promotion from Captain?
New title every week. I don't know. Does it make you feel good?
Makes me feel bureaucratic.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Chief Justice, we could have just gone Justice. Presidential is what it is.
Presidential. CEO.
CEO. I thought about that. We got four more chances. Four more episodes after this one. Yeah. Anyway, talking about episodes, buddy. 1 million downloads. We crossed the 1 million.
Hey now.
1 million download mark.
How about that?
That's right. That's cool, right?
That's pretty hard to believe. And it's amazing. And we're thankful and grateful for everybody who listens and tunes in and supports the show.
Certainly are. I've said before, I think every creator just wants to share stuff and know it's appreciated. And that's what we do here. We're creating podcasts. We enjoy sharing the time together just right here, you know, just having fun.
Yeah, yeah.
You and I always have quite a conversation before and after the podcast. So right. It's cool to catch up. So selfishly, we enjoy doing it.
Sure.
And then we enjoy knowing that other people connect with it. And we just, yeah, we appreciate your support, everybody.
Yeah, I think the sincere enjoyment we get out of it is the right intention and kind of the right space to be in for it to work. I think if we were in it just for downloads itself, that's pretty transparent. You can see through that easy.
That's true. Also, though, what makes it a viable project is the sponsorship. You know, so all the companies that you've heard, what is it, 10, 11, 12 companies through the about 2.5 years that we've been doing this, all those companies are what make it possible. I've said before, this takes me 10 hours every week and you're here with me for a couple hours every week. And the other guys, you know, you understand. But yeah, it takes a while to produce and to edit and get it out there. And, you know, I couldn't afford, literally could not afford that time without the sponsorship of the companies.
Absolutely.
So thanks to those companies, and thanks to everybody who reaches out to those companies and says thank you to them for supporting the Trout Bitten Project. I get that a lot from the people I'm in touch with in the, you know, the owners and the marketing managers. That's neat to know that people are actually not just buying the products, using the codes, but reaching out to the companies and saying, hey, we appreciate this. It just all works together, you know?
Yep. Yeah, you guys rock.
Yes. Okay, Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court.
That's just unreal.
That's what you're supposed to say.
What is this?
Let's get this conversation going.
All right.
Tonight, we are talking about suspension advantages and disadvantages. And just to alleviate any confusion, why do we call it a suspender, Your Honor?
Heary, heary. I will have order on the trout stream. Why do we call it suspension device? It tends to suspend things. We talk about the term of an indicator. An indicator indicates things, and it doesn't necessarily mean it's floating something or suspending something beneath.
Right.
You know, a sighter can be an indicator, and a sighter doesn't float much. It can't carry much weight beneath it.
Yep.
We can look to a sighter to indicate a strike. That's not the same thing when we talk about a suspension device where it's actually carrying some load beneath.
So a suspender does indicate, but not all indicators are suspenders.
You have an article about that, don't you?
I think so.
Yeah.
My first indicator was from Fly Fisher's Paradise, and it was a set of small, half-inch long orange sleeves, which were actually an orange fly line all chopped up and the core removed from that fly line. Anyway, these little, very visible orange sleeves, and we slipped them over the knots in our hand-tied leaders. I mean, very bright. And I would put three of them in my sort of adapted George Harvey, Joe Humphreys style nymphing leader. And those were indicators. It was also a sighter, if you think about it.
Yeah.
I'd have those about spaced out within 3 feet. So it was a sighter. And it's not too dissimilar from the backing barrel that we use these days. I'll leave a link to that in the show notes. But that was my first indicator. It certainly didn't suspend any weight. Those little orange sleeves were not suspending anything, but they were indicators. Anyway, the point is a suspender can hold something up.
Yeah, and there's lots of forms of those. So the typical plastic bobber is one. Foam or cork. We talk about the Dorsey. You know, yarn is a good one. A dry fly can be a suspender. Pinch-on indicators. You know, there's a number of things that can do it.
Yeah, there's kind of good reasons for choosing all of those as well. Maybe we'll get into that in a minute. Plastic bobber, I mean, you know, thingamabobber, airlock, although these days the airlocks are basically a dense foam, aren't they?
I don't know.
I think so. And then there's the Oros, is that what they're called?
Yeah, the ones that they twist, like the spear twists on and off.
Yeah.
Yeah, Oros.
So there's some plastic there, right?
Yeah.
So a plastic bobber, or even a foam, a dense foam, and especially cork, these are all what I call solid bobbers or hard bobbers, hard indicators. And yarn, especially just the Dorsey yarn indicator or the New Zealand yarn indicator, they're extremely light. They're like finesse indicators.
Mm-hmm.
The Dorsey yarn indicator is actually lighter than a dry fly, if you would weigh it.
Oh yeah, I believe it.
But all of those things absolutely are suspenders, and yet they're very, very different tools, and we use them as such. And they're not all created equal because that yarn, like I say, it's so light that makes it super sensitive and delicate, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah. And on the other hand, if you look at the plastic, you know, a plastic bobber, thingamabobber, it's heavier. It's not as sensitive though, but because it has that weight and that mass and a bit more surface area, it can hold and track a lane a little bit better, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The yarn is easily pulled off track. The yarn is easily influenced.
Yeah.
Tying into what we talked about last week, by you, by your mending, by the current. The yarn is much more easily influenced. And so the advantage of a bobber, which like you said, it's heavier. Now that sounds funny to people. You take the medium thingamabobber, which is what, 3/4 of an inch or 1/2 inch?
Yes.
The medium thingamabobber weighs 55, 65 centigrams, which is about the size of a number 12, number 10 tungsten beaded stonefly in my box, which is crazy. When you think about it, nobody holds that and goes, oh, that's kind of heavy. But then you hold the stonefly.
Right.
And you go, oh, that's kind of heavy. You know, it's a density, I suppose. There's something strange about it.
Mass per volume.
Yeah, there you go. You're the scientist. Our degrees are different.
Force of buoyancy. Yeah, I mean, it is amazing because you think about the a 3/4 inch or medium thingamabobber, it can suspend a lot of weight. And when we fish like a 45 to 45, let's say a really long, wide drift.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know about you, but.
Upstream to downstream, yeah.
Yeah, I personally prefer usually hard indie over a soft one because of that. Because we're further out often when I make those types of casts. I can keep line up off the water at a distance and not drag that hard indie out of track or out of the lane.
Yeah.
That's harder to do when you're fishing a yarn indicator.
I'm with you. And I know you and I both do that. And this is the time of the year where I tend to do it the most, even in some of our local waters, even when they're not real deep. In the winter, trout go into what Pat used to call just bobber holes. You know, trout, especially on some of our bigger rivers, really do like to congregate in those bobber holes. And we called them that, or Pat started calling them that, because that's how they were best fished. And once again, you should throw the yarn on and see what happens. It is easily pulled off track, whereas the bobber kind of suctions to the water. And not to make too much of it, but it is. It's a big deal. So maybe we should make a lot of it. It matters.
Yeah.
It does. Whereas the yarn being so sensitive shows you things that the bobber can't.
Yep.
Shows you things about your drift, shows you things about even contact to your fly. And let's get into some of that. So that's what suspenders are. And we've sort of defined the terms a bit. That's good. But what we're really here to talk about is why we might choose one method over the other. Not necessarily one suspender type over the other, but no. Why we would choose a suspension method over not having an indicator in there, you know? What works, why, and when? So, Austin, I think the choice between fishing with or without an indy or a suspender is kind of seen as the number one choice to make in nymph fishing. Do you agree with that?
Mm.
You worked in a fly shop.
No, not personally. I think the first thing to decide is whether or not they're eating nymphs.
Okay, smartass.
No, but in all...
If we're talking nymphing, you're going to lose your title.
In all honesty, the first thing I think about when I arrive on the water is not necessarily if I need an indie or not. It's what does the water look like? How is the flow? How far away am I going to have to fish for myself? Is it real windy? It's not just whether or not I'm going to try to get indicator rides today versus a tight line ride.
Sure. So that's you. But I'm saying, and that's why I said, because you worked at a fly shop. I mean, overall, I feel like that's the first thing people are thinking about.
Sure.
Is it an indicator style or a tight line style?
So let me address that then. I think there's maybe two schools of thought. Am I gonna tight line fish today? Am I gonna indicator fish today? Like they're two completely different forms of fishing, and you're gonna decide to stick with that one all day long. And I'm gonna throw the bobber all day, or nope, I'm only gonna tight line today because those two things don't mix. And we'll probably get into this later, but they do for us, for many other anglers, of course. So the choice isn't one or the other; it's what's best at the given time.
It hardly ever is for us. In all the stuff that we talk about, hardly ever are we saying, there's one way to do this. This is the best all the time. I don't know if we ever say that.
Yeah, no.
You know, I'm that way about the way I rig a waiting staff. That's it. That's the only thing I can think of. But so that maybe that's the primary choice that people think of. And you bring up a good point. It doesn't need to be a choice necessarily, not an all day choice. And you can go back and forth all day long. And you can kind of rig things to make that happen. But you already acknowledged that for your fishing, that's not the most important decision then.
Right.
Whether you fish an indicator or a tight line style is not necessarily the most important decision, even for this next piece of water that you're about to work, right? Like the suspender certainly changes things. It allows for some techniques, but not others. The suspender or the suspension device tactic has its strengths and weaknesses. It provides an angler with a few advantages and it takes away other things. So let's get into that. Let's talk about what you lose when you add an indicator. But let me point this out. Let's say you can keep tension off the indie, because that's the critical thing. Remember, these critical nymphing concepts apply to all types of nymphing rigs. So we can fish an indicator suspender system with a 9-foot leader and a floating fly line. Great. And let's say, as we're talking about this, that you're really good at mending that fly line or keeping extra leader and line off the water. So you can keep the tension off the indie. You're good at it. Let's say that's a given as we talk about this stuff. Because if you're not good at that, it's going to destroy the presentation, right? Okay, likewise, maybe you're fishing a tight line, long leader, mono rig style, and you simply add a suspender somewhere below your sighter. You talked about that last week. And so there you go. Now you can keep the tension off the indie by keeping your leader off the water, being tight to the indicator without influencing it, and then letting the indie be tight to the fly. Hopefully it's not windy.
Yeah.
So say you're really good at that. You're able to keep the tension off the indie. We're going to talk about all of that more here in a minute, but I'm saying that for this conversation, let's assume that we can keep our influence off of the indie. We're good at it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, makes sense.
I think that's key to point out because, like I said, everything else is just going to fall apart. You know, but that's the number one thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So then, what do you lose when you add an indicator?
Right. So for me personally, the feel of the drift is completely different. The things I'm looking for to indicate a strike are nuanced, somewhat similar, but also very different. So the things we lose is direct control. You know, the rod tip, like we talked about last week, being able to sort of guide and lead the flies. We don't have that when we're fishing the indicator. The indicator is now the one steering the bus, right? That's the one who's saying we're going down this lane, we're going to follow this current, and you know, this is the direction we're going to go. The other thing that goes along with that is some of the direct contact. Now, you don't necessarily feel the resistance of your flies against the current, against the strike zone, wherever you may be. You don't feel that in the rod tip. You have to look for that in the indicator so that you can still get the same information, but you have to kind of get it a different way. Same thing goes with strike detection, I think, kind of hand in hand with that. There's less of a physical feel in terms of strike detection and also just a visual feel. Where in a sighter, you may see a large dramatic jump in your drift when a fish eats. On the indicator, a hard indie, soft one, hard indie especially, you may see just a slight bounce towards the riverbed on that eat. You may not always see the bobber dunk completely or the dorsey go way under. So it's more nuanced, I think, and some things are less obvious.
I like what you're pointing out there, that the feel is different. And you don't necessarily mean tactile, like in your hand. You're just saying the feel of the whole thing.
Right.
And that really maybe is summed up by the fact that the indie acts as a buffer between you and the flies. Like you said, it's going to bring it down one lane. That's good. But you have less information about exactly where the fly is. It's a little harder to set it up in the air. I think that's what you lose. And you have to set it up in the air, in the cast, because you can't correct during the drift when you're under the indie.
Right.
You're surrendering that control then to the indie. That's a good thing and a bad thing. So you lose that precision. You don't have that full control over it. So you can't be super precise. If you have a river with a piece of pocket water with a whole bunch of potholes too, you know, maybe rocks and tree parts get rolled around. And you've seen a piece of water that has a lot of potholes. And by pothole, I mean like a 2-foot long, maybe 3-foot long pothole, call it that, it's only a foot wide. And you start to realize that the best fish are laying down in those potholes. Maybe they're 10 inches deep, those potholes are. And if you're just riding an indie system, you can't, during the drift, go, let it get deeper. You wish you could, but you can't.
Yeah.
You know, and you're kind of hoping then that the trout will come up out of the pothole and eat it. But if you're on the tight line, yes, you can get down into that pothole. You have that precision, that ability then to get lower for longer. And that's kind of what it comes down to. Here we are to those first three questions. Are we low enough for long enough? Maybe. I mean, we hope so, right? You don't have that kind of control to let to make it happen, to let it get down, sink down into that pothole. So you lose that versatility, and you have to then adjust in between casts. You can say, I didn't get down in that pothole. All right, let me bring the rig in. We keep it easily slidable for us. Slide it up and down. Maybe you have to add extra weight. And then too, you got to get that cast just right. And we'll talk about getting everything in one lane here in a moment.
Sure.
These things are critical. It's harder to do under an indicator. Now, once it's on the water, I'd say it's much easier.
Yeah.
We may not have that precision, but we're not worried about it. You're going, well, let me keep the tension off the Indian. I'll be good. You know, that's what you're doing. Whether it's after a fishing trip or at a backyard fire, you can bet the Trout Bitten crew has a case of New Trail Broken Heels along with us. It's honestly our favorite beer. This hazy IPA is smooth and full-bodied. Hand-selected citra hops lead to notes of bright clementine and juicy ruby red grapefruit. Broken Heels is a keeper. New Trail beer is proudly brewed in Williamsport, Pennsylvania, and delivered cold to your favorite craft beer retailer every week. At New Trail, it's not about being the best angler. It's about getting out there. So enjoy nature's moments and reward yourself for a day well fished with New Trail Broken Heels. It's Trout Bitten's favorite beer. For over a decade, Smith Creek has helped anglers just like you to free up your hands, hold your gear within easy reach, and keep our waters clean. Smith Creek's family of patented accessories are tested guide tough and backed by good old-fashioned customer service. Crafted from rugged materials like anodized marine-grade aluminum and UV-resistant nylon, Smith Creek products are hand-assembled with pride and built to last. To stay up to date on their latest specials and new product releases, be sure to follow Smith Creek on Instagram at SmithCreekNZ. Quality you can depend on from a brand you can trust. That's Smith Creek.
I think, too, one other point is you can lose some of your stealth when fishing an indicator system. A hard indie, when it lands on the water, can often land with quite a splash or a splat, depending on how you set that cast up in the air.
Right.
A Dorsey or a New Zealand yarn indicator will land much softer, and you can kind of gain some of that back. And yeah, again, the cast is a big deal. You know, if you're out there like Bill slinging things around, it's easy to get stuff tangled up.
Why is it like Bill?
Just because I wanted to poke him.
Why? Why are you picking on Bill?
Because he picks on me.
He can't defend himself now.
Yeah.
I got your back, Bill. Bill doesn't hang up. He doesn't tangle up.
Yeah. His 2X doesn't break off. He just
keeps things separated. There will be more tangles. You just have to admit that. I mean, the more things you attach to the leader, the more things that could hang up, you know? That said, we are still casting these rigs. One of the biggest mistakes that I see taught the most often for nymphing rigs is like, oh, just lob it up there. Keep the loops wide open. I hate that advice. I hate it.
Yeah.
Because then, you can't get everything to land the way you want them to. We want that fly to land first, then the indie to come in downstream of it. And we want to then have full control over the placement of everything in the system, whether that's fly and then split shot even, and then indie. And then if I have to lay line on the water, I want that in the same lane too. I only get full control over that if I get full turnover in the air. If I'm lobbing weights around and the reverse happens, instead of the fly hitting first, you get some of the leader to hit first, and then the bobber lands or the indicator lands, then the tippet, and then the split shot, if you have that, or then the fly, that's the reverse. And bad things happen there, and you did not have full control over the placement. So we still cast these rigs, and you learn to do it. You'll actually tangle up less if you have more speed and full turnover in the system. What actually hangs up, what actually tangles, is a lagging loop.
Agree.
You know, but that's a whole different podcast, isn't it? So what do we gain by adding the indie? We just talked about the downsides, the things, you know, that are not perfect, that are not great necessarily. But what do we gain?
Yeah. Some of the weaknesses are also often strengths. So we just talked about having less control over the indie because you don't have your rod tip. But
yeah,
really, when you are running a suspension device, you tend to get a truer ride through one lane.
Yeah,
and that's because the only thing that's influencing the indicator or the flies is the current itself. and especially if we're doing a good job mending, keeping line off the water, keeping tension off the suspension device. If we're doing those things, the flies and the suspension device are going to go where the river tells it to. And that's really what we want anyhow. And the Indy just does a better job at keeping track of that.
It does. I think that's the number one reason why I'll be having a bad day. I'm not doing well. I'm tight lining. I throw the Indy on, same flies, even the same water, and I catch fish. It's because I wasn't doing a good job with my rod tip and keeping everything going the way it should be. One lane, low enough, long enough, the right speed. But the Indy will do it way better than my rod can. And that's not just me. I mean, everybody thinks that they're riding things so perfectly down one lane. And then you throw an Indy on. Often you can throw an Indy on to see what way the currents are really going.
That's cool.
Now, there's an assumption there that I just made that the top current is doing the same, is going the same way that your bottom current. And nothing's perfect. But that's our best shot anyway, is really being able to analyze the top current and then try to keep our nymph in that same bottom current. Now, under the Indy, again, the Indy will do that better, more true, like you said, than our rod tip can. But you can learn something in some, if you fish a piece of water often and you're not catching fish in like a really nice looking piece, maybe you just catch a couple small fish once in a while, or you strike out in that spot every other time. If you always tight line it, throw an Indy on and you might see, oh man, that current kind of pushes up against the bank. And I've always been leading it then across seams. Go back to the first question, is everything in one lane? No, you were crossing seams all those times.
That's really cool. You kind of first gave me that idea that some days they can eat it better on an Indy rig and seemingly the same water as they will on a tightline rig.
Absolutely.
And that took me a little while to learn that that's actually true. You know, you could throw a suspension device through the same riffle and it's going to drift slightly different than what you're realizing than maybe you're trying to control or create on your tightline. But
yeah,
the other thing I really love a suspension device for is simply water that's far away or something I can't reach.
Oh, yeah.
If I want to fish deep water, with a drop-off that's in front of me I can't quite get to, but I still want to run those nymphs in the same lane. Great way to do that is with a suspension device. Maybe throw a reach mend into that cast to land things in line with the riverbed and get that drift, a clean, true drift through some water that you normally cannot reach because of drag and sag and things just being too far away.
Too far away from your rod tip. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it really does lengthen your reach. We talk about fly fishing being a pretty close range system, nymphing being an even closer range system, tight line nymphing probably being the closest range system. Tight line nymphing falls apart when you have to cross seams. If I have to cross seams, as you just described, exactly, I'm going to throw the Indy on and do various things there. So you can also suspend flies at a fixed distance off the bottom. If I just want to ride mid column, because that's where I find trout are eating, throwing the Indy on is a really easy way to make that happen. Just glide through the middle zone. I'm not trying to hit the strike zone, and I don't have to think about it much. Once it's in the water, I let the Indy then do the work. Again, this could be a dry fly too. That's exactly why dry dropper works so well for so many people, especially during hatches, but not just during hatches either. And you could take that same thing that's working for you during a hatch and take the same principles, the same concepts like we're talking about here, and do it right now, even when there's no hatch here in the wintertime. You can still have many of the same advantages that you were getting under the dry fly with the dry dropper. I find a lot of people really bought into Euro nymphing these days, and they just are totally against indicators. And yet they'll say, well, I fish dry dropper though. That makes no sense, right?
Yeah.
If you recognize the advantages of a suspender, your dry fly in dry dropper, then you should also at least recognize that you could get the same advantage, but to a greater degree, even with the suspender that can hold more weight and that can be slidable up and down. It's an amazing tool. An indicator, a suspender, is an amazing tool.
Yeah. Another thing it's good at in terms of a tool is something that you and I experienced on this past Saturday. You know, fished in some 15-mile-per-hour winds, it was really hard to get a good tight line drift. And both of us ended up going to an indicator style or suspension style fishing to kind of punch those flies through the water and then anchor the suspender to the surface of the water and allow it to do the work. And then we just have to keep up.
And once we did that, it was just more relaxing.
Yeah, that wind way didn't less quit. Stressful. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, the wind was there when we were gearing up. Mm-hmm. The wind was just there. It wasn't going away. It wasn't just a breeze here and there, a little gusty. No, it was solid wind for a long time.
Got worse through the day.
It did. It was. We got steadier, smoother rides because we weren't fighting the wind. And as soon as I threw the Indy on, I was like, okay, good. Get it out there. Get things going. See, doesn't mean I was fishing far away. In fact, I wasn't.
No, you weren't. Right off the banks often.
Right. Not just the water type we were fishing and the places we were, but I didn't want to try to push too much through the wind because at greater distance, the wind was actually just affecting the rig too much. I couldn't get the right placement, right? So I kind of stayed within that pure tight lining range, but threw the Indy on.
Yeah.
I'll bring up one more thing here that I think is a big advantage to adding the Indy. There is like a tantalizing up and down motion. If you're in just a nice, easy rolling current, let's say, or in some faster stuff, if your Indy is on top and it's in contact with the nymph on the bottom, which is what it should be. Talk about slack here in a minute. We don't want that. So when the Indy rises, so does the nymph. And the Indy falls, so does the nymph. Mm-hmm. And there's this up and down, up and down. It can be very subtle. And it's something that it has to be one of the things that just all of a sudden, like you say, you throw the Indy on, things start happening for you. Trout start eating it. Now you can try to do that with your rod tip. And I've tried to do it a lot. And I think sometimes I can kind of make it work. But that Indy and basically the river does it so much more subtly and so much more effectively than you or I ever can.
You're going for the induced take.
Well, there's an induction ceremony.
I'll swear you in.
Your Honor. Hey, all right. How about a few tips then? Just a few tips and we'll wrap this up. A few tips about fishing indies.
Yeah. One of the first things I recommend is just the same as when we're tight line nymphing. We have one nymph, two nymphs, whatever it may be. The same thing goes for when we fish with a suspension device. We want the indicator, the flies, split shot, whatever, tippet to all land in the same seam in yeah. one straight line. That's what makes a good clean drift happen.
Yeah, it's got to start the right way because you can't change it once it's drifting. That's a good point. You know, another thing people often ask me about how I rig, you know, how do you set things up under the Indy? Well, the same way I set them up under, for a tight line. Yeah. So I don't know. There are no flies that I say, oh, these ones are good under an indicator. And these ones are good for tight line. I'll use split shot under an Indy. I'll use split shot with a tight line or just weighted flies. Whatever happens under beyond the indicator can be the same thing that would be happening beyond the sighter. There's no need to switch things up.
Yeah, maybe it's worth mentioning that we're often fishing these Indies on a tight line rig. Mm-hmm. You don't have to be fishing a fly line in a 9-foot or 12-foot leader to do this. You can be versatile by adding and subtracting that Indy off of your Euro or mono rig or whatever you're fishing without having to compromise what style you want.
Absolutely. We did a full podcast on that, tight line principles to an Indy. And it is. It's a deadly rig. Competition scene doesn't talk about it because it's not legal. So you don't hear about it too much. Now, you mentioned about getting everything in one seam, which we say a lot. That is so much easier to achieve on that tight line rig with the addition of the Indy than it is on the 9-foot leader and, the fly line. Going back to what we said last week, it's because there's less to manipulate, with the fly line and with the other system. You have three or four different things that you're trying to control. If you're just adding the Indy to the tight line rig, you have fewer things to control. Fly goes in, then the Indy goes down. Good. It is. It's one of my favorite ways to fish. I know you feel the same.
Yeah.
So we want contact between that Indy and the weight of the fly. I touched on that a moment ago. We don't want much slack at all. We talked about managed slack. Yes, that concept holds here too. You don't have to be super firm, tight from fly to Indy, but boy, you don't want much slack. A couple inches of grace, because too much slack causes big problems. And we acknowledged that last week.
Right, and that slack can be beneficial when we make the cast, that bit of grace especially. You talked about being able to land the flies first and have everything follow. You can do those turnover or those tuck casts, sometimes dramatized tuck casts, where you're actually really stopping the rod tip high, causing that whole rig to stop, those flies to circle underneath, and the Indy almost adds like an extra punch to the whole cast itself, allowing those flies really to drop. And that type of slack is okay when we're talking about this, being able to get low enough for long enough, getting down as soon as we can. Mm-hmm. But when you do end up with extra slack, one in the cast, that's how you end up with those tangles and messes that you get frustrated by.
Right.
And then if you have too much slack during the drift, it really hurts you because the Indy, again, you're almost waiting throughout the drift for that slack to sort of subside. You're going to have a little bit, but it's mm-hmm. not going to be 6 inches or 10 inches of slack hanging out down there throughout the whole drift. And if you've got extra piled in right out from the bat, you may miss a bunch of strikes till you're 3/4 of the way through.
Yeah.
Before you really understand what's going on.
Yeah, you get to decide that placement, and you should think about it. I find people, when they're throwing an indicator system, they're not really thinking about making sure they get everything in one lane, but you should. And they're really not thinking about how much slack they want to introduce, like you just talked about, between the fly and the indicator. Everything should be in one lane. But then within that lane, you can give it quite a bit of slack on purpose so that it can just fall to the riverbed or to the strike zone, hopefully not hang up on the riverbed.
Yeah.
We get to make that choice. It's another concept. It's critical because it sets everything else up. You're going to make adjustments in your cast then and how things go in the water that will get you down sooner or stop you from hanging up without even bringing the Indy in and sliding it up and down. You can make many adjustments in the cast.
Yeah, that's a great point. Another tip I think it's important to touch on when we may choose and how we may choose a certain style of Indy. Mm. I kind of think of it in these situations. Am I trying to fish far away? Am I fishing the spooky fish? Is the water very deep or is it shallow? Because those types of things will answer my question on what type of suspension device I may use. If I'm going to fish far away from myself, let's say through a deep run, I'm going to choose a hard Indy because it's going to track that water and lane much better than a soft Indy that doesn't have much mass, that'll probably get dragged some through my the line out of my rod tip. So that's one instance where I love a hard indicator. I don't necessarily mind when it lands on the water because I'm going to get a really long drift. Any sort of splash it may cause, which could be minimal, probably won't hurt the rest of my 20 yards of drift, whatever it may be. Now, if I'm fishing to fish that are close to me, if it's somewhat lower water, if I just want a more delicate presentation, I'm going to choose something like a New Zealand or a Dorsey-style yarn indicator, because I can land those flies very delicately with almost no splash from the Dorsey. The only splash I'm going to get is from the flies, and I can kind of control that too. I can comfortably cast that yarn indicator distances where I may not be able to cast a hard Indy the same way.
Mm-hmm. Good points. I'll bring this up. I think you can really improve your Indy work by learning good tight lining skills. I think that tight lining forces you to understand, or at least gives you the opportunity, let's say, to understand how your nymphs should be drifting when they really are in one lane. Because you have all that control that we talk about with the tight line system, you have to do the right things with it. And with all that control and all of the feedback that you get, you learn a lot about what a good drift is. And then when you take that knowledge over to an Indy system, you have a really deadly system then. That Indy is like a hinge. You can take your tight line principles to the Indy. And then from the Indy to the fly, it can be a totally different direction. We talked about fishing from 45 degrees upstream and 45 degrees downstream. And it's all tracking in one lane because you are tight to the Indy and then the Indy's tight to the flies, but that there's a hinge there. It goes to this angle to the Indy and then upstream to the flies. And that is super cool. If you get that hinge right, and if you are on the tight line system, tight line to the Indy, like we talked about a minute ago, you can sometimes feel the strike right through the Indy. We brought up that the Indy is like a buffer. Yes, but if you get things just right and you are tight to the Indy tight to the flies, you'll feel it sometimes. You'll feel the hits.
Mm.
You don't have to lose a lot of strike detection if you do it that way. And the other way is good too. Now, if you're laying line on the water and you're mending fly line and stuff, you're not going to feel any hits, right? But you can see them very well on your Indy if you have things set up right. You want to keep the tension off the Indy so that you can trust what the Indy is showing you.
Excellent way to put that.
To tie the best flies, you need the best materials. With decades of commercial fly tying experience, Fooling Mill understands what it takes to tie a great fly. Over the past several years, they've worked hard to source and prepare a range of fly tying materials that will elevate your experience at the Vice. Fooling Mill fly tying materials have arrived with a range of over 1,400 products. You'll find the staples like marabou, bucktail, and rabbit zonker strips. You'll also find CDC, stripped peacock quills, 12 dubbing ranges, synthetics, chenilles, yarns, and wools. All Fooling Mill materials come in an extensive range of colors that are consistently dyed. So what you receive from them tomorrow will be the same color next year. Their materials go through a rigorous quality control process, so before they're packaged and shipped out, you can be sure they're up to the highest quality standards. Ask for Fooling Mill fly tying materials at your local dealer, or find them online at foolingmill.com. So anything else, Austin?
Yeah, maybe I'll dovetail off of that to close things out. Mm-hmm. You can read the Indy on the surface, just like you may be reading your cider.
Yeah.
When we talk about in this podcast, watching for a slowdown of your cider to know when you're starting to drop through the column into closer to the strike zone or to the river bottom,
yeah,
you can see the same exact thing on your indicator. Yeah. And we've touched on this before, but I'll reinforce it here. When you start to see the bubbles, the water start to pass your indicator, you'll visually see that hard indie, that yarn, whatever it may be, slow down. That means mm-hmm. your flies are dropping past where the indie's riding. And eventually you'll reach this sort of steady pace, the steady state of a drift. And then you'll see either when you come in contact with the bottom, with the fish, whatever it may be, that indicator will either go right down or it'll just bob a little bit and come back up. May only dip mm-hmm. down half the diameter. You'll also see on a dorsey, when I'm talking about the slowdown, that downshift, you'll see the dorsey or a New Zealand style yarn indicator will actually stand up. So it'll land on its side. And then as it receives the load of the flies or whatever it may be below,
mm-hmm.
that dorsey will stand up and you'll see, okay, it's almost like a flag saying, all right, you're riding, you're in contact, you're in touch. Or that slack you had in your cast, your presentation, has sort of worked its way out and we're on that steady state of a drift again. So
that's awesome.
You can learn a lot just by watching the surface. Don't just say, you know, set it and forget it. And if it goes down, mm-hmm. that's when I'll set the hook. No, really watch what's happening on the surface. It'll keep you interested. It's not so monotonous to just cast the bobber and let it drift.
Right.
Really look to see what you can learn through the drift. Even if it's not just a change in current speeds or a drop off or some sort of undertow that's down there that could affect how you fish that section. There's so much you can get out of it.
Mm-hmm. You make great points there. I really like what you say the dorsey can do. That's very unique because it's so light. It'll stand up, like you said, like it's a flag when it has contact. You can't see that on a thingamabobber, for mm-hmm. example. It will not show you that. It's just another advantage of that style. All right, there it is. Add a suspender and love your life. Take it off and love that too. Every tactic is valuable. You might have your preferences. In fact, I'm sure you do have your preferences. We all do. But when what you like best doesn't suit the moment, then change. Maybe trout are eating down in those potholes and your indicator approach has the nymph drifting too high in those zones. Or maybe it's way too windy to make do with a tight line and adding a suspender just makes everything simple again. Nothing is easier and nothing is more elite. So let that stuff go. Suspender nymphing has its own set of complexities, and as Austin said, it's not as simple as casting and just watching a bobber go downstream. That rarely gets things done while wading a river, so dig into the details. Okay, next time we're talking about the three ways to dead drift our nymphs and how that goes hand in hand with the three zones to cover. I hope you'll tune in for that one too, because just like the first episode with the three questions, these three ways to dead drift get right to the heart of our critical nymphing concepts. So, Mr. Chief Justice, Austin K. Dando, will you read us out?
I surely will. Okay, so remember, the Trout Bitten Project is a free resource for all anglers. The Trout Bitten website hosts over 1,000 articles, 1 million downloads, and endless stories, commentaries, tactics, tips, and more. Find what you like through the top menu through the search page. Navigate by way of the categories and the tags, too. Be sure to find the Trout Bitten YouTube channel, currently featuring the Trout Bitten Tip Series, the Fish and Film Series, and the Trout Bitten Fly Box. These are all in collaboration with the wonderful Wilds Media.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for listening to the Trout Bitten Podcast. Please give the show a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or Spotify and leave a comment, because that really helps. Until next time, friends, fish hard, enjoy the day, and find your life on the water.
Okay, Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court.
You know, if you're out there like Bill slinging things around, yeah. Oh, yeah.